Welcome to No Tourists Allowed, a podcast where two recognized travel industry executives with a combined 69 years on the inside of travel and technology give up their secrets to the thing everyone wants to do. Travel better, pay less, and see more of the world. Enjoy today's episode.
Hello, listeners. I'm Mike Putman.
And I'm James Ferrara.
And welcome to our third edition of No Tourist Allowed. We're very glad that you joined us today, and we have a chock block full of content for you, travel content today that I think you'll find really enjoyable. And James, there's a couple of really interesting things that have happened this week in the travel space, which are a little bit unusual. And the first of which is Disney aboard one of their cruise ships is now offering a $5,000 cocktail.
Yep, that's aboard the new Disney Wish, isn't it, Mike? Brand new ship.
It is. So this $5,000 drink, it comes served in a Comptano, which is the Bounty Hunter accessory container, most recently featured on the Mandalorian and the Book of Boba Fett, which I hope I said that right.
You did, Boba Fett. Now, Boba Fett is one of the most popular characters from Star Wars, even though in the original movies, very minor character, bounty hunter. But he became a sort of cult favorite. And now they've developed the Mandalorian series and then the Book of Boba Fett around sort of backstories around this character. And as you might be able to tell, I'm a very geeky, big fan of this.
I was about to say, where did you get the time to do the background on this unless you just knew it off the top of your head?
I do. In fact, in The Mandalorian, one of the characters is what everyone refers to as Baby Yoda. It's Yoda, but looks like Yoda, but as an infant. In fact, it's a different character, but it's one of Yoda's race. And I have, oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm going to say this publicly. I have a stuffed Baby Yoda on my bed.
Oh, yeah, I probably would not have shared that, James, but interesting.
Anyway, that's not the story.
Oh, yeah. But so anyhow, if you're interested in a $5,000 drink cocktail, head aboard the new Disney cruise ship and have your Star Wars drink. Also in the news this week is, we've spoken about last week, and we'll have some more information this week about problems that the airlines are having, overcapacity, lack of supply, et cetera. And as a result, the domestic airlines typically overbook flights, as we all know. And if they have more people show up for a flight, because there is generally a no-show factor, but if they have more people show up for a flight than they have seats, then they are required to basically bribe people off the airplane, right? So this in the industry is called involuntary denial of boarding, which is relatively typical. I've had it happen to me, James. I'm sure you've had it happen to you.
Sure have.
Yeah, where, you'll be ready to take off, and the person at the gate will say, if anybody's willing to take the next flight to wherever you're going, we'll give you a voucher worth $100, $200, $400, $500. And generally what they have to do is they have to keep bidding this up until they hit that magic number. Well, just this past week, Delta ended up having to offer $10,000 for someone to give up, actually someone's people, to give up their seats on a relatively short flight. So if you can imagine being on a flight which might have cost, $200, $300, and the gate announcer says, we're looking for volunteers, here's $100, here's $1,000, here's $5,000. They ended up paying $10,000 on a prepaid Visa, which is really unusual because it used to be that they would only give you a voucher towards the purchase of
future
more
travel.
Of their own. Yeah, their own travel. So there was a self-consumption component to that. But they actually provided $10,000 prepaid Visa cards. So that is a big wow. And it's kind of like winning the airline lottery, if you
will. That did not happen on my flight to and back from Mexico this past weekend, but I was offered $750. Turns out I should have taken it because the flight was delayed on the tarmac. We sat in the plane for so long that I actually, you know, would have taken off around the same time that we did take off. And I would have been $750 wealthier, but you never know. Hindsight is 20/20. Yeah. Look, there's a lot of crazy stuff going on in the industry. And just so it doesn't sound like we're unduly bashing the airlines, it's happening in other parts of the industry as well, too. You know, I've got cruise bookings. Advisors of ours are talking about having cabins canceled because cruise lines have to reduce the occupancy on a particular sailing, or having whole sailings canceled. I mean, the difference there is it doesn't happen while you're standing on the port waiting to board the ship, like it right. like it does happen sometimes with airlines when you're standing right there in the airport and you're kind of marooned when these things happen. But there's a lot of disruption. Let's just say that, right?
Yes, and I am going on my first cruise since the pandemic, and I hope you aren't putting some bad juju on my cruise by giving me that information, but we'll see next week.
Check your emails.
Yes. Well, today we have a very, very special guest, a very good friend of both of us, and we will be bringing him on coming up next. Well, James, we are very fortunate today to have what I would truly call a legend in the travel business. I know he's a good friend of yours, good friend of mine, and I'd like to welcome in Mr. Chris Dane. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you, James.
You're welcome. Hey, let's give everyone a little bit of a sense of Chris's background and standing in the industry. Otherwise, they're going to think he's a legend in his own mind.
Right? That could be partially true as well.
Both Mike and I have had the opportunity to work with Chris over many years. But Chris is also, I would say, one of the best known figures in the travel industry. And that started with a 20-year-plus service at American Airlines as the managing director there of travel agency sales. So anyone on the travel agency side of the industry knew who Chris Dane was, representing, you know, one of the most important airlines in the world. But even his work and his reputation extends beyond that. Chris was president of a unit of HRG, which is one of the largest travel companies in the world, and also has had tours of duty as a president or a senior executive of a number of the well-known names in the travel industry, including being one of the original executives at Vacation.com, which became the largest travel agency consortium and a travel company behemoth of several kinds in the travel industry. So, Chris, you know, we could take up all the time we have with you just talking about your resume.
Right. So, and let's not forget about Chris's stint at Delta Vacations, Delta Airline Vacations too. That was an important role. And his current role as the president of Hickory Travel Systems. So,
absolutely. So, Chris, thanks for taking the time out of all of that importance.
Thank you, James. Let's not put him to sleep talking about my resume, but get to the meat of the matter.
Yeah, absolutely. So let me do a quick rapid fire with you, Chris. This is something we're going to be doing with guests each week. So I'm going to ask you a simple question, and if you can just give me a one-word or one-liner, and we've got about five or six questions I want to go through real quick, all right? Here we go. Favorite destination?
Hawaii or Italy.
All right. Either favorite airline?
Delta or American.
Oh, God. Oh, he's so politically correct, isn't he? Favorite hotel or hotel chain?
Marriott or Hilton.
All right. And
a true business travel.
Yeah. And your favorite cruise line?
Probably Seabourn.
Seabourn. That's a good one.
Ooh,
that's a
very good one. Refined.
Yes. And the last one, fill in the blank here, Chris. On vacation, I like to
eat, drink, play golf, and hang out with my family.
Excellent. Excellent. Very good. Very good.
I think not necessarily in that order, by the way.
Hey, Chris, you have such history in the airline industry. I think you started with Eastern. Isn't that correct? Or early in your career?
With Eastern Airlines and then the original Frontier Airlines, then American Airlines, and then GDS, and then tour operator and OTA from there.
Right. So with that kind of history and that kind of perspective, I'm really interested. We're interested in asking you to comment on the current air market. And, coming out of the pandemic, there's a lot of turmoil at the moment. We don't need to focus on the negative, but, where are we in the airline industry and where are we going?
Well, let's not talk about today because I think everybody knows the negative. But the real issue is the long-term concerns. We don't have an adequate air traffic control system, and we didn't have one even before COVID. So we've been way behind on updating that. Obviously, any industry with employees are having trouble with them, and that's a current problem. The bigger concern as we go through this period right now are twofold. One, of course, the airlines become an easy whipping boy, if you will, for politicians and the like. And, I read yesterday where a senator wanted to charge airlines $27,000 a passenger for later canceled flights. Well, if you do that, you're going to have a lot of unintended consequences. Not the least of which airfares, which are already outrageous, will go right through the roof even further. And so that's not the solution. The solution is to do a better job of scheduling, to do a better job of air traffic control management. In the old days, now to me, the old days is a whopping 2 years ago. If you had an OSO or off schedule operation at an airline, you could pretty well recover within 24 or 36 hours. Today you have that kind of an operation and it's taking 3 and 4 days to get everything back in sync again. And it's probably mostly airlines. It is certainly air traffic control, but it's all tied to people and not having enough of them. And, I don't really have an answer to it because this is not a business that I recognize. We've never been through that kind of environment ever. So it's a strange environment to be in for sure.
So where are we going, Chris? I mean, we have peaks in airfares and then they settle down and we get into competition wars and so on. So, you're right. What's happening at the moment is really is not the issue. The question is, where are we going? What's going to happen the rest of this year? Do we get back to something that looks like normal? What about next year? Does inflation and fuel price, going to continue to affect fares? I know you don't have a crystal ball, but
no,
I'm asking you your experience.
Look, the two big issues with airlines is twofold. One is a pilot shortage. Because the military is not turning out pilots the way they did yesteryear. And so the airlines have been left to their own devices to recruit and hire pilots. And that's a highly skilled job. It's not something you can wake. It's highly specialized. So they are now going out and doing really starting to train their own pilots virtually from scratch. And to do that, there's a longer ramp up time. You've got to get certified and what have you. That's the first problem. And so that's not easily resolved. And even as we sit here today, I was reading something, I think American Airlines still has 100 regional jets that are in mothballs because they don't have any way to fly them. And those are the guys, the regional carriers that are suffering the most in this process. Now they're addressing it, of course. You know, I think they're literally doubling the pay of some of the regional carrier pilots to attract them. They're trying to recruit them from other countries. Russia has put in place a process where none of their pilots can fly for other carriers or leave the country. Those kind of things are going on, you know, to try and deal with. The second part of it is, and probably just as significant, is while we don't like to talk about it because we've dealt with it for 2 years, there's still COVID out there and people are still getting sick and unable to report to work. You know, hopefully that starts to wane, so it's not such a regular part of our work habit. So, you know, while the third part of it is that there has been so much turnover. You know, Southwest told me that by the end of this year, they would have had 40% turnover in 2 years. And what that means to them is much lower productivity because they're all in a learning skill, trying to learn their existing jobs, where before, you know, those people were with them 25, 30, you know, plus years. But now because of COVID, you know, forced a lot into retirement, a lot to get to seek other higher paying jobs. So you're dealing with a learning a skill set of just experience they're suffering from. And so it's taken them longer to do less. And that will get better over time. The pilot situation will get better over time. I honestly don't see it getting better, though. I see it being not as bad as it is this summer because the flights are so full. But you're still going to have these problems for sure through the end of the year and probably realistically through first quarter for sure.
Yeah.
That kind of addresses the supply side of the equation. And as we all know, free market's going to ultimately resolve the problem. So our supply is a little lacking. What do you think about the demand side, Chris?
Well, the demand is, you know, off the charts today, as we've seen, and driving airfares. You have the combination of a lower demand. You know, the airlines can't even get to operating a 2019 schedule because they don't have the people. So, and the demand, you know, through this summer is through the roof. And I'll give you a couple examples, real world examples. A friend of mine was trying to fly from Miami to Nassau, which is, I think, 90 miles, the end of August, to go to on vacation. The airline, who shall remain American, wanted to charge him $1,500 for that privilege. I got stuck in Washington last week, and I had two choices on the airline. There was a first-class seat to Kennedy from Washington National for $2,000. Well, I could fly from Washington National to LaGuardia for $4,000. That's not sustainable, to say the least. And I think several things are going to happen. One, I think there is going to be a lowering of demand come this fall. You're going to have, I think people are going to get discouraged with flying by going through the service issues that they've had to go through. They're really going to work to avoid flying, which is not good for this industry. And three, I think oil will start to moderate, which also will help to bring down the airfare. So it'll be a combination of a lowering demand, hopefully lower oil, improving hiring at the various airlines.
It's fascinating, Chris. Let's turn to hotels. You have a background there too, an important background there too. So what insights do you have for our travelers on what the hotel market looks like now?
You know, that has been the brightest spot throughout COVID. You know, I mean, obviously everybody hit the deck early on in COVID and everything came to a screeching halt. But hotels have come roaring back. They have come roaring back on both demand and really on their pricing. Their pricing is ahead of 2019. Their demand is through the summer will be basically equal to or slightly greater than 19 from an occupancy standpoint. You know, New York, for example, the week of June 12th, which was according to STR, was the highest occupancy factor of the major cities in the U.S. at 86%, when New York has really been dying for the last couple of years. And I think that's a good indication of how strong the demand is for people to travel and how strong the demand is, even if it's a staycation. And you're starting to see, you've just started to see, now that they've taken off international testing, you're now finally starting to see inbound demand for international travel to help support the overall demand. But I don't care if you're going to, you know, to Europe for vacation. You know, Italy is through the roof. You know, to go drive down the Amalfi Coast, depends on the last number of your license plate. It's so crowded. So an odd number license plates could drive on odd number days. It's pretty fascinating. How the demand is through the roof and the services are all stretched to a limit. You know, if you think of a restaurant during like a holiday season when they're packed with parties or what have you, you know, it's hard to put out your best product when you're jammed to the walls. And that's really what we're going through throughout. But hotels, like everybody else, are likewise having trouble finding people, having trouble maintaining their room standards in terms of cleaning and what have cleaning protocols. They're doing a better job of cleaning, but they're not cleaning as often and giving you the service that you're normally accustomed to just because of a staff shortage.
Yeah, there's been too much curtailing of services as a result of the pandemic period, and now sort of in the endemic period, we're still seeing it where venues are not open. Dining venues are not open, or room service is curtailed, or housekeeping is not provided on a regular basis. I mean, just as a traveler personally, outside of my professional role, it's a real pet peeve of mine because
absolutely,
you know, hotel rates are not going down with the services. Hotel rates going up, services going down in some cases. The city of LA, we talked about this last week, Mike and I, actually, the city council has declared that hotels within the city limits must provide daily housekeeping unless the customer opts out of it, the guest opts out of it. So that's an interesting development. It's a fascinating time we live in the industry, actually. So, Chris, with all this demand, is part of that business travelers? You know, is business travel back?
No, it's not back, and it won't be back this year. It's coming back. It's the last piece of it. There's two pieces to business travel. One is the groups and meetings, you know, conventions and conferences. That is absolutely back in terms of the number of meetings and conventions. Attendance at those individuals, they're actually up over 19 because so many meetings were canceled, so they're all being compressed into a relatively short window. So if you're wanting to plan a conference this year, you're going to be hard pressed to find space to do it. And if you can, you're going to pay for it because of all the compression that has gone on in the meeting business. So that's doing fine against 19. The transient business is not back. It's from a small and medium enterprise or an SME basis is actually ahead of 19. From, say, a Fortune 1000 basis, it is well behind 19 because so many Fortune 1000 companies are not even back to the office yet. And so, you know, they can't have people, clients, come visit them or vice versa. So that, and that will not come back this year. Hopefully next year it will. And the third part of it is you're getting a lot of leisure travel Thursday, Friday, Sunday, Monday, returned for business and mixing it with leisure travel as well. So you see a lot of that. In fact, I had a hotelier tell me recently, he says, I can't tell you who's in my hotel or whether they're on business or pleasure, because the lines have gotten so blurred.
Yeah, this is.
But it is down for sure.
Yeah, and it's particularly a popular a way to travel for younger generations, millennials and Gen Z. We've seen all the research on this, that they consider business trips an opportunity for leisure time. So.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And they do have a pent-up demand. What I worry about, there is a demand for them to travel. You know, they just haven't had the opportunity. And what I worry about, what happens in a recession, or what has historically happened in a recession, I should say, is that business travel leads the country into a recession and leads the country out of a recession. And so, you're hearing the R word mentioned more frequently these days. And we have seen a modest dip in bookings among Fortune 1000 companies the last 3 weeks, to where it was, while it was below 19 3 weeks ago, 2019, it's gotten further behind 2019 than it was. And by order of magnitude, I'm talking about, 3 weeks ago, we were running 10 to 15% down from 19. And today, over the last 3 weeks, the numbers have been running 18 to 28% behind 19. So we've seen a modest. Well, it could be the cost of travel. It could be the concern. It could be the hassle of travel. It could be concerns, corporate concerns on a recession. And when I tell you what we're seeing, I will tell you at the same time, everyone we have talked to a person has not seen it yet. So, it's one of those things that it may be an early stage, trend that we are collectively not picked up on, or it's just some information that we're getting that is still not as accurate as we'd like it to be. So it's hard to tell at this early stage.
Yeah, I would say just with and I had 20 years of experience in the corporate world as well. And I would say corporate travel, a lot of corporate travel is discretionary. So, there are times you've got to go see a client or you got to go to a meeting. But there are other times when you go, it would be good if I went to see that client, but I'm not going to do it the week before Christmas, as an example. And I think that's probably having an impact right now is that, if I've got to do a corporate trip now, I'm going to think twice about it because flight cancellations, higher flight prices, just general congestion, there's still that threat of COVID. I might be holding back a little bit. So I think that probably has a lot to do with it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm manning a booth at a convention instead of sending five people, I'm sending three. That kind of thing. All of that, you're absolutely right. All of that is going on currently.
Or it just may be that business traveler is stuck in the airport waiting to get on a plane. Yeah. Listen, Chris, this has been really insightful. I'm really glad that you were able to join us. Before we let you go, let's turn personal for a second. Mike and I like to ask for we like to ask for tips, maybe a little secret. I mean, you're basically a professional traveler. So you've got to get through the airport. You've got to check into the hotel. You've got to stretch your travel dollar. Is there any tip or secret you'd like to share with our listeners? And it's just amongst us friends. We won't tell anybody.
Look. It never works out for me, and when you hear me say it, you'll probably understand why. The best day to travel during the week is on a Tuesday. It's the lowest load factor day of the year. It's also the lowest fares of the year. Coincidentally, Tuesday and Sunday are the best days to book air travel from a pricing standpoint. Those things work well. I like to travel off season, so where there aren't crowds. So, for example, you know, before I lived in Florida, you know, if I wanted to go to Florida, I'd go to Florida in the first part of December, you know, after Thanksgiving and before Christmas, before the crowds really descended on the place. You know, I am going to Italy in September, late September. So I'm going to go after the peak and hoping I'm not going to have what I've just told you has been going on there. So off peak travel always works for me. I find it the best. And, you know, when it comes to, you know, the best advice I could ever give, particularly now with COVID and the complexity of travel, is, you know, use a travel advisor. You want a single throat to choke, and you don't want it to be your own when there's a problem. You want to be able to call somebody when you're stuck in an airport because you're not going to get service in an airport in any way, shape, or form, and then you can't get through the reservations. So you really, and then you still have COVID protocols that are changing. So, particularly internationally. So, you know, that is the absolute best advice I can give you on that basis.
Well, we couldn't agree with you more, Chris. I mean, you're a man after my own heart, singing the song that we like to hear. Mike?
I've got one wrap-up question for Chris. So as a past airline executive and also a consumer, what is your thought about the airline bailout and their responsibility back to the taxpayers?
Well, you know, so I'm still an ad geek at heart, you know, and you know, air travel is vital to this country and vital to the economy, both from shipping and from a passenger standpoint. You know, I thought it was fair. Otherwise, you would have had massive bankruptcies. You have a government that probably is having a difficult time wanting any more consolidation, but you would have been forced into it had there been the bankruptcy. So I actually thought, now we can argue about the amount and what have you, but I actually thought it was a fair thing to preserve the transportation industry going forward. I think the mistake that we all made is, you know, every time we thought it was coming back, it did for a bit and then fell back. And now now everything is being overwhelmed. And nobody can react fast enough. But I think they actually, that was the appropriate thing to do, given how critical the air transportation system is to this country and its economy.
And I definitely agree. I guess my question or the point of my question is really more around, all right, so we bailed airlines out a couple of times now as a nation, and yet they rebound to record profits or potential record profits based on the demand. You know, is there a fairness in having some of that paid back to the taxpayers or the government?
I guess when I, and this will be the airline part of me coming out, you know, if you look at what airlines have made since the Wright brothers flew, they're basically at about break even. So for 100 years, essentially, you're at break even. And two, when you look at the cost of travel relative to what it was, say, in the 60s or 70s, it is a significant bargain. And really much same thing with cruise lines, same thing. It's not like they are rolling in dough. By any means. Yeah, they have their up periods, but they're generally followed by, you know, deep troughs after that. And that's why, you know, they've really never made any money, you know, over the life of the airline. And virtually every airline's been bankrupt, which ought to tell you something. Right. And it's that old joke that if, you know, if you want to be a millionaire and get into the airline business, you start with a billion. With a B.
Right.
And you would know, Chris, because you knew the Wright brothers, didn't you?
I wasn't there when they flew, but I certainly read about it in the paper shortly
after. Well, great. Well, Chris, right. Once again, thank you so much for being so gracious with your time. It was fun hanging out. I'm sure our listeners took a lot out of your wise advice and perspective in the marketplace, and just great catching up. So thanks so much.
Thanks, Chris.
Hey, it's always great being with you guys. Thank you for having me.
Today's episode, we've covered a couple of newsworthy things, and then we had our great guest, Chris Dane, on. And now we're going to talk a little bit about popular destinations. James, I know you've done some research in this area this week. Can you tell us what's trending?
Sure, Mike. And, you know, what would a travel podcast be without lots of place names, right? So we want to get everyone salivating a little bit about travel. And like I have done in weeks before, I have gone back and looked at about 10,000 trips booked in the last week. And there are no surprises maybe in the top destinations. Jamaica, Montego Bay, of course, Mexico, we have Cancun, Cozumel, Cabo San Lucas. In the Dominican Republic, Punta Cana. Also in the top 10 there, Hawaii, Las Vegas, Orlando. So kind of what you would expect to see. Really, that's the pre-pandemic lineup too. But we look for things that jump out at us as a little bit special. One thing I'm really happy to see, and I know you are too, Mike, is the return of the beautiful big cities of the world. So we lost that during the pandemic. People wanted to stay away from the crowds, and they virtually disappeared. But now we're seeing Los Angeles, New York City, Miami, New Orleans here domestically, Paris and London, of course, internationally. I noticed a big blip in a really great destination, and that's the country of Spain. We're seeing enormous rise in bookings in the last few weeks. And last week, I saw Madrid, Barcelona, the resorts along the Costa del Sol and the Costa Blanca, the islands, Mallorca, Ibiza, Tenerife. And Mike, a destination that you and I were in last year, kind of improbably, in the middle of the pandemic when things seemed to have gotten better. And just before Omicron, we were together in Valencia.
We had a big, very big conference there. Hundreds, if maybe a couple of thousand people. I can't remember for sure, but it was a lot of people, and had just a fantastic time. And that was my first time for being in Valencia. Fantastic food, really, really good wine. And before I went to Valencia, I was not a Spanish wine fan. I've had some good. I've had some that I didn't much care for, but I had a lot of really good Valencian wine.
Yes, a lot, if I remember correctly. and Mike, do you remember we went to the food market, those incredible food stalls, and we were buying, I don't know, jars of this and that and confections. And I mean, it was just overwhelming. You know, compared to the States, I mean, just the variety and the freshness. People live closer to their food in Europe. Maybe we're getting better here now, but that market, which was like 100-something-year-old covered market in the center of Valencia, was an attraction in and of itself. The colors, the smells, the spices, people eating, standing in the middle of the aisles. I mean, it was really a big part of the experience for me.
Yeah. Well, for me too. And the thing a lot of Americans don't realize is that there aren't grocery stores per se. Now, there in some countries, in the UK and Germany, there are grocery stores, but a lot of Europeans buy their groceries from food markets and oftentimes buy their food on a day-to-day basis. So you don't see people hauling out, you know, big Walmart bags or Food Line bags or what have you. They come in and take away what they're going to have for dinner or lunch that particular day. And that works really well when you're looking for very fresh ingredients, you know, fish that was caught this morning. You could potentially have it on your plate for lunch or for dinner today. So it's a really interesting way to enjoy food. And I think Europeans do enjoy their food a little bit more than we do as Americans, because I think we take it for granted because we have these huge stores that we can go in and find virtually everything at any time.
Couldn't agree more. And speaking of food and Spain, I've got a recommended read for you, Mike, maybe while you're on your cruise ship. It's a book called The Telling Room. A telling room is a room where in the countryside of Spain, caves would be carved, or natural caves, into the side of hillsides, and families would keep their cheese and herbs and meats and stuff in these cool caves. And the caves all had an adjacent room where people would sit and eat, and the old men would tell stories. So that's The Telling Room. But the subtitle of the book is A Tale of Love, Betrayal, Revenge, and the World's Greatest Piece of Cheese. So if you get a chance, it's about living in Spain, and it's about the food of Spain, and it's a really wonderful read. It's by an author called Michael Paternity, and it's called The Telling Room. So
great tip.
Spain, you have read it?
No, I said great tip.
Oh, great tip. So Spain, we'll leave you guys with Spain this week. Not a bad place to leave you, believe me. Mike, and you know, last episode we talked about a tip for everyone traveling, and I think we should do that again, don't you?
Sure, absolutely. And I can talk briefly about ways to buy business class tickets and travel really nicely, sometimes for the same or similar price as you pay for coach. So just for perspective, for anyone who hasn't been in the business or hasn't purchased a business class ticket, when you're going from the U.S. to Europe or the U.S. to Asia, or even South America for that matter, generally planes have three classes of service, right? And so you have a coach class of service, and now there's even iterations of that, which would be like premium coach or premium economy. But for the sake of this discussion, let's just call it coach. And then you have what is called business class. And business class is generally an upgraded version of coach. And oftentimes, but not all the times, but oftentimes you will have what is called first class. Now, just to give our listeners a point of reference, and this is, I'm going to generalize here, but just to give you a point of reference. During normal times, and this summer not being quite normal times, you can fly from the East Coast to Europe for $1,000, maybe $1,200, if you do your proper planning. Sometimes you can even find it less than that during the summer. During the winter, it'll be generally significantly less. In perspective, if you were to buy a ticket in business class, you would pay, depending upon where you leave from in the U.S., but somewhere between $6,000 and $9,000. In general, there are some exceptions to that. And then first class would be $8,000 to $12,000, again, in general, from the East Coast to Europe, which is a big difference, right? I mean, if you're thinking about, all right, I can pay $1,000 versus in coach versus $6,000 in business, and the business class flight might be 7 hours from the U.S. to Europe. You know, is it worth $6,000 to be a little bit uncomfortable? And typically I would say yes, but there are some ways to find these really, really affordable prices. So there are several sites. One that I personally use is called Passport Premier. Now this site is a paid for site. They do offer some of their content at no charge, but what they do is they scour all of the airfares to Europe, as an example, and they do it for the rest of the world as well. But for Europe, they will scour all the fares, and they might find a fare like what I found on my upcoming trip to Scotland for $2,000 from the East Coast to Scotland round trip in business class, right? So not $8,000, but $2,000. And you have to be kind of in the game, so to speak. It does require some research to find these deals. But in comparison, people that are traveling with me on this golf trip to Scotland that's coming up later this summer, they're paying about $1,400 or $1,500, where I'm paying a little over $2,000 for a business class ticket. You have to, there's several tips to this. Using some of these sites like Passport Premier is one, where they'll actually send you text messages when there's a fare sale. Like that's what I was able to do. I got a text message from them saying, if you're flying to the UK, here's what they call buying opportunities, and it's a chance to buy at very reduced rates. There's another trick, which is if you are going to, let's say you're going to somewhere in Central Europe. Let's say you're going to, Munich as an example. Almost always flights to Milan, so that's Milan, Italy, have highly discounted business class tickets. And the same is true for Lisbon. So what you could do is if you're going to fly to Munich and there's not a nonstop from your airport, what you could do is you could fly business class potentially over to Lisbon or to Milan and then take a connecting flight, which might be in business or maybe it's coach. Maybe you suffer in coach for an hour and a half, you know, for that inter-European flight. But you could buy it by using that kind of strategy. You could potentially buy a business class ticket for $2,000 or $3,000 on that big leg, the very long leg, and then take an inter-European flight for $100, $200, and then you get to your destination and then back home for significant savings, and be able to sit in business class. Which, James, as you know, it's really nice to have a lay flat bed so you can sleep on the way over there. Better.
I think
food.
Really nice might be underselling it a little bit. It's a world of difference. There's no doubt about it. It's a world of difference. It's comfortable. There's food. The food is, you know, relatively good for airlines. Their service. It's totally different.
Right. So there's a couple of tricks for you that can make your travel more enjoyable. Getting you up front in the plane at paying a price, maybe a little bit further back in the plane. So that's about all our time for today. We really do appreciate you listening to No Tourists Allowed. Thanks for all the comment. We've gotten so much feedback, so much positive feedback. Our subscriber numbers are really going through the roof. I just happened to take a look early this morning. We're up like 2,000 or 3,000% over where we were last year. Week in terms of downloads. I know I'm really enjoying this. I think James is as well. And please continue to subscribe. We'll bring on more exciting guests, and we've got some really good ones lined up in the upcoming weeks.
Sure. And we're going to be introducing some prizes and rewards for you joining us. And please tell your friends too. And if you are a travel advisor, one of the travel advisors that we work with, think about telling your customers too. Remember, we're just spreading the love about travel and a lot of valuable inside information from two guys who've been around quite a long time. So thanks, as Mike said, thanks for being with us, everybody. And remember, no tourists allowed.
Thank you for listening to No Tourists Allowed. No Tourists Allowed was produced by the Greenville Podcast Company. See you next week for another episode.